The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
North Korea launches an ICBM. The bat tax is scrapped. Market's still in an uptrend. And our guest today is Nora Youssef. We're going to be talking about women, wine, and Wall Street. All this and much more on episode number 519 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, it's Andrew Horowitz, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. It is now the end of July, coming up to August, just in a couple of days here, 2017. And I got a few things to talk about before we get to our guest, a couple of things I think you'll find of interest. Just a quick note to let you know, I know a lot of people have been really interested in this. I got a lot of emails on this, and if you haven't heard about it yet, I'm going to tell you a little bit just for a moment. Investology, which is our advisor-crafted technology-enhanced portfolio solution, which really gives you the best of both worlds, the best of, I guess, what you would call the robo-style, at least the back end, and some of the great tools that we use to develop diversified portfolios. Well, we're in the third stage of the beta. People are actually all the way through the process now of moving through their portfolio design and then investing in funding and the full investment process and tracking all of their portfolio assets. We're going to be opening this up very shortly to everybody. So just stick around. I'll let you know. If you want to get on the list, just go over to the podcast show notes for this episode or any episode over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And just scroll to the bottom, you'll see a little form there. We'll put you on the list for those that are interested in getting first crack at this, and we'll make sure that you get on. And I think what we're going to be doing is giving away a couple of things to the first people that come on that are post-beta testers. We have a good group of people that are helping us to really understand all the workings, making sure everything works just perfectly. So you can check that out. That's Investology. Now, thanks for that little commercial break. I want to talk to you a little bit about the markets just for a moment, some of the eco that's going on here. We'll talk about economics first, just to bring you up to date on what's going on. GDP came in this week, gross domestic product, at 2.6% on an annualized basis. And that actually is a good number overall. It was a bit short of expectations at 2.8%. Now, of course, this is quarterly numbers that are annualized. And when you look at this, it came in a little bit shy and markets were not totally thrilled with that. But yet it is a move in the right direction. However, last quarter at the same time was revised down to 1.2% on an annualized basis versus 1.4%. So when you take that off and then you look at the quarter over quarter and you annualize it, you have to realize that the 2.6 was from a bit of a lower base. And when you look back a year ago, it's still from a lower base. Therefore, the reason why there was disappointment was because you had lower bases that were being calculated into the current value. And therefore, the 2.6% probably should have been even higher. So the whisper numbers, the expectations were for 2.8% year over year. When in fact, if you really think about it, that would have been fine, a slight miss. But again, it was from a lower base and an adjustment and revision downward. Now, the GDP deflator, which is an area that is focused on by the Fed, this talks a little bit about some of the cost factors, et cetera, that goes into the GDP, was only 1% versus 1.3. Last was 1.9. So therefore, the deflator is coming down, which once again goes with the whole discussion that there really is not much pricing pressure on anything right now. Some markets weren't really happy there. No inflation, GDP short of expectations. What does that mean? Fed's on hold. Maybe they'll have another incremental rate increase, but it doesn't look like they're going to have a substantial amount of need to really ramp up rates for a while. And therefore, that's why, once again, even though markets were somewhat disappointed, it didn't move the needle very far. Markets were down a little bit. They came back a little bit. There's still a tremendous amount of liquidity in the markets. The dollar hit a multi-month low. And basically, we're seeing this somewhat indifference right now. Nobody's really looking to sell anything. Nobody's looking to panic out, to hold their positions. The money keeps on flowing into equities on any dip. And that, until we see something very significantly different, which I don't know what that's going to be, nothing should really change. It could be a one-off event that we see. I mean, we saw this North Korean missile launch that went about 1,000 kilometers and was up there for, I think it was over 30 minutes or so. I don't remember the exact timing, but it was up there for a pretty good amount of time, landed in the about 200 miles off the coast of Japan. They're not happy. I mean, can you imagine that? Can you be out there? Imagine that being out there on a boat. Saying, what is that? What's going on up there? What's going on? Boom. Lands. Now, obviously, it wasn't designed necessarily to have any kind of explosive device. They were just testing the launching capabilities and the distance and time of what this could be. And the continuation of the rhetoric that the North Koreans have been discussing about how they're looking to get a missile that could reach mainland USA is not making anybody happy. I'm not quite sure what the next move is going to be. The whole idea of having some kind of, discussions and make nice commentary and warnings and diplomacy, not really working. So I don't know if there's going to be some kind of a show of force, military maneuvers, maybe a couple of Navy ships that enter into that area, a joining of forces between, let's call it Japan, China, and South Korea, United States, saying, hey, you know what? This is not going on. Now, what's also different about this, I want you to remember something. What's different about this than what we saw in Iran, where Iran was in the process of creating a nuclear reactor, so they say, but at least the ability to create some kind of atomic or nuclear bomb of sorts or nuclear weapon. The difference was that they weren't at least outwardly commenting on how their goal would be to reach the United States. Their goal, from what they had talked about, was using it as an energy resource, creating the nuclear capability for energy. North Korea is not talking about that. North Korea is clearly talking about they have the capability of a nuclear weapon, but what they don't have right now is the capability of the long-range missile. And what they're continuing to discuss is the fact that they are attempting to create this nuclear weapon, and they are also now looking to have it in a delivery mechanism that could reach the United States. That's a whole different discussion than what's going on in Iran, where we had sanctions and we had diplomacy and we were cutting them off from this and that. And we finally said, okay, they don't have the capabilities. We're going to shut down their nuclear visions and testing and all that. And we sent all our investigators over there and did all that. The difference is we have no access. We really don't have a lot of trade. We don't have a lot that we could really put on North Korea, except for maybe pressuring China to do something. So there's a lot of moving parts here, but the difference that I see and the real concerning factor that I see is that they have ambitions to harm us. That's what their number one ambition is. It's not for anything other than just research or scientific exploration or even energy resource. It is to harm the United States. That is not going to sit well with anybody. So I think there is a very high potential for a show of force and military might that's going to help to, or at least hope to, dissuade them from any of their ambitions. But that doesn't mean it's going to work. We're not dealing with someone who is very clear-headed and desirous of anything more. They still think they're at war with South Korea and the United States. We did say, sign something, but there was never a peace treaty signed. We have a infrastructure built on and a framework built, but nothing of a true, okay, the war is over. They still think they're at war with us. Anyway, we'll see how this plays out. But is that something that can affect the markets? We'll see. One of the things we do know is the markets are still in an uptrend. And more importantly, there's a good amount of support that is below. So where are we? On the S&P 500, we're at 2472. There's support, according to our volume at price, at 2462. So we're talking about 10 points. That's really not much. And we'll see a bounce off of there potentially. If it does dive through there, 2435 is the 50-day moving average. And at that level, there's also a tremendous amount of support as well. And so there is a significant amount of general support within, we'll call it a 40-point range. So 1% to 2% down on two slots, that's not a big deal. And as we have known that there has been so much liquidity, what we talked about, we know that the economics are doing okay. We know that earnings, generally speaking, are doing fine. Revenue beats are good. We talked about that last week. We talked about that on DH Unplugged this week with John C. Dvorak. So generally speaking, the markets are in a good and healthy place unless something dramatically changes. Whether or not that's going to be, maybe there's some concern about what's going on in the White House with the recent replacement, the firing replacement of not only Spicer with Scaramucci and also in the whole communications department, but also now the chief of staff has been replaced as well. Priebus has been replaced by Kelly. So I don't know if that's going to cause any problems. I mean, right now, the markets seem rather impervious, unconcerned. They have a lackluster, they're saying, you know what? It's fine. As long as we see the earnings, as long as we see the economics holding up really well, and on top of that, we have a very dovish or accommodative Fed, who cares? So the VIX came up a little bit last week. I mentioned on the DH Unplugged, I picked up VIX. A call on the VIX, a call option on the VIX last week, which is in the money right now. But we'll see. I mean, there seems to be a little bit of complacency, but again, not so much that there's so much concern right now that there's going to be anything more than that. Now, we get back after we talk with our guest. I do want to talk with you briefly about some of the things I've been reading recently, some of the things that I read and I had to actually put down. I couldn't read them anymore. Something about it, but we'll talk about that. Let's get right to our guest. And today we have Nora Yousaf. She's a third generation financial advisor with RBC Wealth Management. And we're going to talk to you a little bit of Nora about, you know, the whole idea of what women and maybe some specifics about how finance is seen and what to do with finances from a woman's perspective. How about that?
Let's do it.
All right. So you have a kind of an interesting, I guess you do a series, an educational series called Women, Wine, and Wall Street. Wine, by the way, W-I-N-E, just to clarify that point. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So this is something I came up with that is a social yet informative in terms of financial education and personal development for women to better themselves and their families' lives. And it's a fun night out. It's hosted in a very historic mansion built in 1881, which is a really charming venue that sets the mood for a unique experience with a sommelier, food, music. And then when we get to business, it's a two-track night, the first track being financial and the second track being anything but. So following the theme, however, of the night. So, for example, I've done topics like aging gracefully financially and physically, where I'll lead the first half of the night talking about finances as you age, and then bringing in a renowned endocrinologist talking about what's going on in our bodies as we age.
Right.
Another recent popular topic I did was around the topic of success, where I spoke about the topic of financial success. Then I brought in a New England Patriots Super Bowl champion player, Dion Lewis, to talk about his professional success and the team's success. So they're always a really informative night where people walk away. We started off with a handful of women, and now it's just exploded within 4 years with hundreds of people coming to these events, and you need an RSVP to attend.
Yeah, sounds like fun. So what have you found to be some of the most concerning issues and factors for women kind of today?
Well, you know, I would say the number one issue that I see is really a mental block, that finances aren't for me. I hear that over and over again, and it's hardly ever said by a guy. It's almost always said by a woman. And so I'm doing my part here to make some sort of change, because after all, women are living longer. It's no secret, guys. We're not going to tell you our secret. But we are living on average a few years longer than
yep,
you.
Right.
98% chance for all of us at some point of our lives that we're going to be in the driver's seat of our own finances. Plus, women-owned businesses are the fastest growing sector in the U.S. Us ladies now have the majority of advanced degrees. And if you talk about the millionaires out there, a lot of people are surprised to hear that 45% of them are millionaires, are women. So this change from previous generations, it really makes finances for women more important than ever before, yet that confidence gap still exists. So my approach is to teach in a fun group setting to start the conversations. Thereby, by having the conversations, people are asking more questions. If they're asking more questions, they'll ultimately gain some more understanding. Because let's face it, finances are still pretty taboo in a lot of ways.
But yeah, let's get to that for a second, because let's peel that back a little bit. What is it that, you know, you said that, you know, men, you know, are not, you know, maybe not as afraid, quote unquote, or maybe, as apprehensive about dealing with finance, but women seemingly are. Is that a societal issue that still is in play? What is it?
Yes. You know, I would say it's a reflection of where we're coming from in society, not so much where we're going. But, you know, you see it all around. For one thing, I always love when I'm in the grocery store and you just look at the magazines that are geared for women versus men. To me, it's comical to see the difference in topics where, you know, women's magazines will cover, you know, tricks to get stains out or the last diet trick. Hardly any mentioning of money, which is kind of important stuff. I think you'll agree, and your viewers and listeners
absolutely
will agree.
Right.
Whereas a lot of men's magazines will almost always mention some sort of, hey, stock pick or financial idea. So you know, a lot of it resides there, and changing the perception that money isn't a guy's topic, and that this is really it can be an interesting and fun topic. Maybe even as fun, you know, choosing new investment can be as interesting as picking out a pair of new shoes. And you also see it in TV, of course. I mean, you just flip on to CNBC at noon and they've got the halftime reports with all the graphics and music that, if you're looking quickly, you think you're in the middle of a football game.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is society driven, that it's geared towards men. But I think, again, that's a reflection of where we were, not so much where we're going.
Now, this is, please don't take offense to this, but is that maybe why on certain shows, like many of the business shows and Fox Business in particular, and some of the shows related, there's always, might I say, as I'm not saying this, but other people have said this, there's always these hot women as the anchors. Is that to bring in the men?
Sure, there's not much eye candy for the ladies, is there?
Right, no, not at all. Nothing that
yeah,
I can think of.
And they're playing to their audience or who they think the audience is. So again, it's more that, you know, what comes first, the chicken or the egg. So it's going to have, changes are going to be made slowly, but and advisors also, you know, there's a slow change happening. I think the last percentage I heard was 12% of advisors are women and the rest are men. So again, it's a societal shift that needs to take place. But I think as people are realizing more control the women are having on finances, the more the industry, the more society is going to shift.
Now, let me ask you this. If one of your Women, Wine, and Wall Street series, if I wanted to go to that as a, not speaking or anything, but if I want to actually attend one of those, would I be allowed?
I've got plenty of wigs.
No, I'm asking you seriously. Would I be allowed to go?
No, I'm joking. Of course, yes, you would. I do not make it exclusive. Plenty of men have attended and said, hey, listen, my wife or my friends going to this, I'm also super interested. Can I come? I, of course, say yes. In fact, especially the session where I had the football player, I, of course, made that open to men as well.
There's a reason why I asked this. Because there's one thing about, you know, this whole shift to everybody's included in everything concept, right? I was a member of my temple, a men's club, and there was also the women's club or whatever they called it, right? And it wasn't because it was a, quote, exclusive club just for men or just for women. It's just that, you know, this is one area that it's a kind of a men's thing, and they do men's kind of things, whatever those things are, sports related or whatever. And the other one was women. They do whatever womanly things are that they want to do. I'm not saying there's a specific thing that I'm targeting they have to do. It's just that whatever they choose to do, whatever it is. And it was kind of like, you know, there was a whole hoo-ha about, oh, the men's club doesn't allow women in. And like, why does everybody have to allow everybody in if it's a particular club? You know, if we have a scuba diving club, do I have to, you know, have, and really it's all about scuba diving and all that. Do I have to bring in hunters? I'm just saying I know it's a weird example, but it just seems to me, but that's good that you allow them in, because one of the things we saw this week was, I think it was State Street Capital just came out with a commentary that they're going to be very strongly opposed to all men boards. There's about 497 companies or something like that that are all men boards that they have found, and they will be voting against the directors, and they will be stringently and very strongly protesting the fact that there's a lack of diversification on boards. I don't know if you saw this.
No, not yet, but I do watch the board placement pretty closely.
Yeah, well, this is going to be something because there is. Now, on one hand, I could argue the case, and maybe you can help me with this, that, hey, you know what? Maybe there's no women that want to be involved in these particular boards. On the other hand, I could argue somebody's not allowing them in, right? I mean, there's two sides of this. So I'm not quite sure which one that is, but maybe we'll find out soon enough, I suppose, if there's going to be enough pressure. But let's just get back to this. So in terms of approaching financial planning and investing, in terms of looking at the area, is there a, and I'm sure there is there a difference that you have found between the way a woman will actually approach this whole topic versus how a man will approach the topic?
Good question. You know, I would say the success I've had with this series, I think that goes to show, and it's evidence that we're striking a chord, that people want this information, they need this information, and they appreciate it in a group setting. So I think there's something to the group setting dynamic. I think there's something that women tend to be more honest about what they don't know, and that they're seeking to understand and be educated. There's also, I found, an appreciation for a holistic approach versus just focusing on investments, because I think it goes to, you know, when we're speaking and covering financial well-being of your children, how to create good habits in them, how to make sure their estate planning is protected so they receive the most family wealth as possible, and receive the most financial aid as possible from colleges, and also focusing on their aging parents. Those are kind of topics that really resonate for women as well. And I think it's because it's just in line and it's natural with their traditional roles and the family as a primary caregiver.
Again, I'm asking these questions. I'm asking them not, I'm not leading in. Hopefully it's not coming off the wrong way. I'm trying to tread a little bit lightly on certain things, I'm not being offensive. That's my point. I'm not intending that. I just want to understand.
Hard to offend. Don't worry.
No, but is there an emotional difference in that? I mean, I'm seriously, because I mean, you know, I'm married for many years, and I know that I seem to approach things a little bit more logically than my wife, and she thinks she's right in the way she approaches things, which is fine. I think I'm right in the way I approach things. So is there something about a difference in levels sometimes between men and women on their logic versus their emotions?
No, you know, I think, again, it goes back to society. You know, I've seen some women who are so practical, and then the husband is super emotional and doesn't think the investment feels right. So, right. You know, I think, again, it goes back to societal stereotyping of women being more emotional and men being more practical in how they dress and how they spend their money versus women. I saw one slide and just made me laugh once, talking about the difference of men and women. But the men shop for a pair of shoes, they take 2 minutes. When a woman shops for a pair of shoes, they're out of the mall after 3 hours. I just laughed to myself because I hate the mall. So I think there's a lot of stereotyping that goes along with that.
Right. Well, I mean, I know that, yeah, I don't go to the malls either. I get it from Amazon or wherever I get my shoes from. But my wife, But on the other hand, I find dread in going shopping, right? I mean, she actually has enjoyment. It sparks a much different chord. Again, I can only speak from my own circumstance. She enjoys doing her thing, yeah. And going back and maybe meeting her friends and having lunch and all that. I'm like, oh, I'm not interested in that. Give me the sneaker that fits. Give me the right size. And get me the hell out of here. That's the bottom.
Yeah, I would say it goes right in terms of investments. I'd say it goes back to who has the least amount of time because they want to make a decision probably more quickly, and who is more confident on the topic or is more educated because they'll have a more practical and reasonable conversation versus relying on gut and emotion.
I've talked to other people in the past, and we've talked about the hunter and gatherers concept, just the basic concept when it comes to investing and how actually, the truth is that women may make much better investors longer term because they have a lot more patience. They're not in the game to win. They're not in combative mode, if you will, like some men are. They're not in the situation where if they're wrong, don't tell me I'm wrong. Versus a woman may be a little bit more practical, a little bit more long term mind and all that. That's something too. I think is a very interesting thing to explore.
Funny because, when you talk about the difference of men and women or characteristic types, typically being aggressive is a more male characteristic type. So when someone's more aggressive financially, as you can get into trouble more often than two. Sure, you can get better returns, but you may also obviously lose more money and not stick to a strategy as long. So there may be something to be said for that of how women characteristically or their characteristic traits are more, level versus aggressive, more conservative versus aggressive and risk, and comfortable with risk.
Right.
So again, it may go back to those sort of stereotypical characteristics of men versus women.
All right, so moving beyond this women, wine, and Wall Street. And by the way, we're going to start a men Merlot and money workshop, I think.
Oh, I love it. Why not?
Why not? I'm kidding.
So, it has to have the alliteration.
Yeah, of course. All right, so I was thinking a few other ones. I was thinking Mezcal, which is like a tequila. We could do that. Or Muscle, but that wouldn't kind of go with the whole drinking mode, which is obviously an attractor. But anyway, let's talk about financial planning real quickly throughout various time frames of their lives. Let's start with a discussion of women in their early ages, in their 20s.
So it's a great time to start to get educated, right? So you start to understand what are the basics of an IRA and why is that beneficial to you and why would your money grow faster in that type of account if it's invested the exact same way in a non-retirement account. And also take the steps to build your own credit and have the right buckets in place and pay off your debt as soon as possible. In your 30s, okay, now you're in a job, you have a little more comfort level. You for sure should be negotiating more. Women, I point out, are terrible negotiators. And I say that because most women are first to admit that, yep, I'm a terrible negotiator. I'll fight for my family, but I'm terrible at advocating for myself.
Right.
And again, it goes back to those stereotypical and characteristic types of how men and women are conditioned to be, right? Women more, want to be likable, where men have a more domineering or conditioned to be a bit more aggressive. And so a couple tips there is to remember, it's not about being liked, but it's about being respected and remembering that we all work to make money. Mm-hmm. Whether you're in a nonprofit or for-profit, you are working to make money and you need to really internalize that and not feel guilty about earning a paycheck for yourself and your future family. So a few things I'd encourage. One is stick to the facts. Don't be emotional. Secondly, realize that hiring managers and HR, 95% of them are willing to negotiate. So we always hear about the pay gap of men versus women. Well, sure, there's a systematic change that needs to happen. But while we're waiting for that to happen, it may take a long time. We need to make changes ourselves and change the conversations we're having. So be willing and make sure you are negotiating. Otherwise, you are almost always leaving money on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And not accept the first offer you're given. So many women and men are fearful of, but more so women than men, will be fearful of, gee, they may not accept me. What if they rescind the offer? There's a lot of fear around saying, holding back and saying, you know what, I'm not going to accept this offer. But you're wrong in that position. Okay, very unlikely that an employer will rescind the offer. You have the upper hand. They want you. They chose you. So don't accept the first offer and allow some time to breathe. It's sort of like a courtship. when a guy asks you out and you don't say yes right away, drives them a little bit crazy, makes them want you that much more, and you say you're maybe going out with a friend of his.
No. Don't get to that level.
So you get the idea. It's the same sort of mindset. Thirdly, I would say, don't reveal what you made in your last job. So many people, particularly women, make this mistake, and they're too honest and say how much they made in their last job. Employers ask that so they know what kind of offer they can give you. For example, if they have $100,000 budgeted for a position, you say you made $60,000 in your last job, they'll offer you $70,000.
Yeah.
What's the incentive for them to offer you that $100,000 that's allocated? If anything, they'll just get a bonus now because they've saved that money. So don't reveal what you made. It's actually, starting 2018, has become illegal in Massachusetts for an employer to ask how much you made in your previous position. Number four, do your research. Like any situation, go and prepare. There's great resources out there between salary.com, payscale.com, that you can specify your region, your position. And you also want to skew that number higher as to what you want to be earning, because, again, they take the average of what men and women make, and the women's numbers skew those averages down. And lastly, I'll mention, if you're already in a position, you're not seeking a new job, but you are subject to, I'm sure, what all of us have encountered at some point, what I like to call job creep, where you start doing, and you're hired to do A, B,
and C. You're not talking about the boss.
The employee.
Right, but you're not talking about a job creep being the boss.
No.
Okay.
No.
Progression.
I'm talking about, what's that?
A progression.
A progression, yes. Of now you're doing A and Z because you did such a good job, which is fine, but you need to be compensated for it.
Right.
So watch your language and don't ask for a raise, because a raise entails a 2 or 3% increase. You're not interested in that. What you really want to be after is a salary adjustment. That implies a 10-15% bump up in pay.
Hmm. Okay. I'm going to take that one down. I like that one. Salary adjustment. I like it.
Salary adjustment.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to your 40s, at that point, you know, there's maybe children in the picture there. And of course, what all women will contend with, that are mothers, will contend with the very difficult position of coming off of maternity leave and deciding, do you stay in the workforce? Do you opt out and perhaps for a few years? My argument to you, of course, it's personal, and for sure you do whatever is best for you. From a financial standpoint, I would encourage you to try, and I don't mean particularly full-time. It can be part-time, to keep your hand in some sort of employment for future career prospects. And what I know people do not think about when they're on maternity leave, it's the last thing they're thinking about, but you do want to consider it. It's Social Security.
Right.
Your sake of your Social Security benefit. And I wrote was quoted an article for CNBC on this. Here's the thing. Social Security will take an average and run it through an equation of your highest 35 earning years. And the reason women's salary or benefits are so much lower than the husband's, I see it all the time when clients come in to see me and we do a Social Security strategy session. They'll say, what the heck? I earned about the same salary as him. Why is mine so much lower? And the reason for that usually is for those years that they opted out 100% out of the workforce to raise and work at home and raise the kids. So for those years, they get a big fat goose egg in their earned income. And when that's factored into your 35 highest earning years, it drastically
brings your average down.
Right down. So even if you keep your hand part-time, it makes a drastic difference down the line.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot to think of. Yeah, go to 50s. I want to hear this next. I know that this is kind of interesting because this is where we start now getting into another level here, right?
Absolutely. At 50s, another level, and that level is college. It's no secret. The tuition bubble is at $1.3 trillion. That's a T as in too much. So it's expensive. So you want to be a college-savvy mom or college-savvy parent for the men that are listening. Ensure that you're, first and foremost, I always say, make sure the kids have skin in the game. Even if you are the one of the few that can afford to pay full tuition, I don't advise it. Make sure your child gets up for that 8 a.m. class and is taking some loans out. Also, where your child goes to college is as I always like to say, is not a reflection of how you did as a parent. What you want to do is not allow, right?
Yeah.
Don't allow them to make $250,000 decision. You need to guide them because they don't know what's best at this point for themselves. And you want to help set them up for some financial success versus burdening them with debt they really hadn't considered because they don't have enough work experience.
You know, I have a lot of people that I know, I have a lot of friends that I know that did just that. They let their kids make the decision and they chose a school that was a comparable school to an in-state school, which would have cost, let's call it X. And they said, I don't want to go to that school. Why? Well, it's in-state. Well, what does that mean? It's out of state for other people. I don't get it. And they decided to go to an out-of-state school that was X times 1.5. 50% more. On the base, or even closer to possibly even compared to an in. In other words, it was the out of school state was, let's say it was 45,000. Was in state could have been, let's say, 10,000 for a state in state, or maybe 30,000 for just a regular price school. They just didn't want to do it because it was an in state school. Crazy.
See it all the time. So one thing, you know, and a lot of folks who earn a good living are quick to say, oh, I'm not going to get any financial aid for my child. That's not necessarily true. So what you want to know, like anything else, is how colleges calculate what they're going to give your child. And what they do is they run the finances of your family through what's called the expected family contribution equation. Isn't that a nice term?
Yeah.
What they expect the family to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
So the main factors there are the parents and students' income and assets. So that does not include, as of now, retirement assets. So don't use financial aid as a reason for you to not be contributing to your 401k or IRA. Also recognize when they look at assets, college funds or those 529s can and will likely be used against you as a parent. So it's conflicting because you're doing the right thing, right? You're saving money, putting it aside in this tax beneficial bucket. However, colleges will likely see that and use it against you. And what I mean by that is if it's a parent's asset, college will count that into their equation. So a potential solution for that, and it depends on how much money we're talking about. Every situation is different. But there are potential solutions for that, for changing the ownership of that 529 into a different family member's name. Okay, I'm just going to kind of give you the highlights here because every situation is different. So there's a workaround for that. Secondly, income, so important. It actually has the biggest weight when they calculate that expected family contribution. And so what colleges do, and a lot of people don't realize this, colleges will look at starting this year, FAFSA will look at the income parents earn the year their child is a sophomore in January. That calendar year is the base year colleges use. And they won't really look at it again unless there's some change, serious change in the family dynamic, like a job loss or divorce or death.
Right.
So that's the year for people listening. That's the year for you to, now this is a very technical term. That's the year for you to look as poor as possible.
right. To ditch it all and just kind of lay off.
Exactly. So again, And that's just the tip of the iceberg. There are so many little tricks and little avenues and strategies you can take to make yourself more attractive for financial aid.
Yeah, this, this is one of these situations where we're getting mortgage. You want to look as you know, as solid as you can. This is one of the situations where you want to kind of do the opposite.
Yes, and it depends if your child's looking at a FAFSA or CSS profile school because they have different rules of what they look at. But you're getting the idea.
Yep.
Now, moving on to 60s, 60s plus. I'll end off there. Women, as I mentioned, are living longer than men. So women in particular, you obviously want to make sure your money is stretching further.
Yeah.
So you want to be looking at, okay, are my investments making sense for me? Am I properly diversified? So many people say, yeah, I get it. I'm diversified. And they're not. Make sure your risk is appropriate for you so you stay consistent. Be sensitive to rising interest rates and what that means in your fixed income. and doing the numbers out, okay? Also be aware, just like college, Social Security is another one of those areas where there's a lot of hidden money to be had for those who are in the know or work with a financial advisor who's in the know.
Right.
So Social Security, there's a lot of options out there to optimize your benefits, particularly even in the light of the recent changes they've made, particularly for those who are married, you have spousal benefits, or if you were married at some point and you're divorced and you have ex-spousal benefits to work off of. And lastly, I'll end off with widows. You are sort of, as I like to say, a unicorn in the eyes of Social Security because you have the most options available to you. And I almost always find extra money on the table for widows who can play between their personal benefits and their deceased spouse or ex-spouse's benefits.
That's good to hear. A lot of great information there, Nora Youssef. We're going to cut it here because you have places to go. I have to wrap it up here. RBC Wealth Management, we'll put all the information on how to contact Nora, get her information, all that on the show notes for this episode, episode number 519 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Nora, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a good one. Bye-bye. You know, one of the things I had, right before we went to the guest today, Nora, I had mentioned that I wanted to just briefly talk about something that I don't know how I feel about this. I do know how I feel about this, but I'm going to share it with you. And maybe I can have a bit of a cathartic experience here and get it off my chest somehow and figure out really what's making me a little bit concerned about some of this. But, you know, recently I have a broad swath of places that I go to find out information and news and data and opinion. And so let's separate now the whole idea of, okay, I get my research from, you know, this area and I combine it with technical and fundamental and economic. And okay, we get that. And I can look at the opinion pieces on that, but let's just stick to the fact that, okay, I can get the data, I can do analysis of it and come up with some conclusions. And then I look at the news headlines, what's happening, what's moving markets, things like earnings or maybe, you know, new product advancements or any kind of mergers and acquisitions that may go on with companies. Okay. And you get that information, put that together. And then you have the news that may be related to government and government looking at either some FDA clearances or some changes like we saw last week with regard to the tobacco stocks, which took an absolute beating after the FDA came out trying to reduce nicotine and a variety of other rules that were put forth, or at least proposals that were put forth, that would put a damper on the whole area of tobacco. And so there's all that that goes on. We'll call that the whole hard side of information, the facts, the information that looks like, you know, what the economics are, the charts that give us the price, the reaction, all the things that go into just the raw data so that I can make my own assessment of what's going on. Then there's the other side. And the other side is the opinion pieces or the analysis from someone else about what's going on with regard to a particular topic, whether it be the government, whether it be the Fed, whether it be a particular earnings call, an analysis of that, the economics that come out, or just something that may be going on about the goings-on inside of a company. And recently, I have a few different pieces that I read that I would call broad-based global opinion. And the pieces that I read, there's two that I could think of in particular that generally have been, I would say, somewhat critical. No, forget that. Let me start again. No, not somewhat. They have been very critical of the Fed and very critical of the current and even the past administration's process. And when I say administration, I'm talking about government in general and governments around the world, by the way, of how they've handled things since the crash back in, we'll call it 08, 09. And how they funded banks and nobody went to jail and how banks have gotten all this great benefit, but yet it hasn't trickled down and how it's really not creating any inflationary pressures. And the Fed is just basically building a balance sheet, all these kind of things that go into it and what the potential is going to be moving forward. And I read these because I want to get multiple sides of the story and understanding from some very, very bright people. And recently, I can't tell you if it's something that is going on with me with regard to what I'm looking at, or it's the tone of what's going on in their publications that is getting me uncomfortable. Because both publications in the last 2 weeks, and particularly this week's, I couldn't read through. I had to put down. I said, I can't. It's making me feel bad. It's making me have this real negative vibe going on that's not really necessarily giving me a confirmation of what I'm seeing. But that's okay. You know, that's okay, because you want to make sure you understand all sides of any investment or economic or any a political side, right? You want to understand what's going on, generally speaking. But, and maybe this is all because of the way the whole news media is going on right now with the, you know, these guys fighting Trump and these guys fighting the media and these guys, you know, looking at, you know, all the potential for lawsuits and negativity. And there seems to be a lot of negativity out there. There's good things happening in the markets, but it's a lot of negativity everywhere else. Protests and people looking for either impeachments or people getting fired, or there's a lot of real negative stuff going on. And I start reading these and I go, oh, this is depressing. You know, every piece that I'm reading is just a constant hammering of everything that's going on. And by the way, they may be right in the long haul that the Fed has done the wrong job. The Fed has really created a bubble beyond all bubbles that will pop and will just absolutely destroy us one day, all of us. Even us that are ahead of this. Even those that even those things that those people that are smart enough to get, you know, on the wayside. Don't forget, even if you were smart enough to get out of the markets back in, I'll pick a date, late 2007, you stepped aside of everything. You know what? There was a lot of pain in not only everything around you, your friends, your family, coworkers, your house, the economy, maybe your business. It was impossible to sidestep everything that was going on there. So even if they're right, and even if you're right, the fact is that it seems that they just won't get off of this whole negative vibe of what's going on. And I'm starting to wonder if it is a perma situation with them, that no matter what, they will find a way to be negative, or if they're just brilliant and well ahead of the curve. Now, I don't want to stop necessarily reading their work, because I think it's part of the overall, and I want to understand what's going on from their perspective and find out maybe they're right about this. Because if you remember, if you watch The Big Short, for example, okay, the whole premise of that movie was there was a guy that was, and if you haven't watched it, you know what happened, but I'll tell you, there was a guy who said, hey, the sky's going to fall, and nobody believed him, but he was absolute in his belief in this, made billions of dollars, but only after he lost a ton of clients and was bleeding, hemorrhaging money for a long time. So maybe it's just a issue of patience, waiting out and outlasting the Fed and all the things they're doing. I don't know. But meanwhile, here's the problem. The problem is that while you may be right that, I'm picking a date, 5 years from now, everything's going to collapse. Well, for the last 4 years, you've been preaching this and being so negative that you haven't been able to capitalize and bring yourself to a point of doing anything that would be beneficial. There's one thing about being conservative and maybe a little bit cautious. There's another thing about being totally opposite of anything that's going on. Trend followers will tell you this. It's only price that pays, they'll say. Forget about all the other things, the fundamentals, the economics. Forget about all that. And to a degree, I would say that there is a very, very good point and something very reasonable that you can say and feel good about with that concept because you'll know when prices aren't right when they start going against you instead of getting ahead of it. So being on the trend and then jumping off if you can. Now, you may be a little off. You may not be able to get on the trend at the exact right time, and you may not be able to get off the trend right at the exact time. But in the meantime, at least you caught some of it. Whereas if you have such a negative opinion about everything all the time, and when I say negative, I'm not saying cautionary, and I'm not saying somewhat concerned. I'm talking about negative, hardcore negative. Nothing's good. I think then you have to reevaluate, what is it? Why are you so concerned? Why are you so scared? You know, they say, you can't win if you don't play. Now, that's in anything. If in sports, well, you can't win if you don't bet. You can't win if you don't get up to bat. You can't win if you don't get in the basketball game. If you're sitting on the sidelines just watching and waiting for something to fail, maybe that will never happen during your lifetime, or at least during the time that the game is being played. So if you want to be in the game, at least play somehow. And if you want to get out, that's fine. But trying to spread the gospel that everything's so bad. I mean, human nature, we're skeptics, I think, as humans, generally speaking. There's a bunch of people, of course, that are the opposite of that. But generally, people are skeptics. They want some proof of something. But when I'm looking at all this negativity personally, it starts to play on you. It starts to get you upset, and then you just don't want to play. And I said, well, that's just not how I want to deal with my day-to-day. I don't want to be brought down by this and then have my head scrambled in such a way that I'm paralyzed. Maybe you have seen something like this, and you've experienced this. Now, I tell you all about that because we know that emotions play an important role. As a matter of fact, in my book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, available on audiobook, by the way, over at Audible or Amazon.com. That's the first line of one of my chapters about being a disciplined investor. And the problem with emotions is that when it comes to investing, what do you do with them? What are you supposed to do with emotions when it comes to investing? You're supposed to check them at the door. Put them outside. Leave them there. Once you get involved with emotional investing, and this is something we talked about a little bit with Nora a moment ago, you're sunk. You start buying things like, you love Snap, so I'm going to buy that. I love the product. But the company and the product itself may be totally disassociated. Maybe a totally different situation going on there with regard to how great the product is to the ability for the company to make money. They may have a terrible product, but they know how to make money from it, and that's a good thing. So when we look at this and you look at what you're reading, beware of what we call confirmation bias, where you're looking to find other people who agree with what you're saying, just for the sake of feeling like you're right. Get alternative information. If you're someone who follows, let's say, the conservative side of politics, well, maybe get the liberal side too, just to listen to what's going on and then make your own opinion about all the facts that are being brought to you. Now, a lot of people who are hardcore liberals can't deal with that. They just can't deal with listening to anything other than what is on the liberal side of the equation. People who swear by Fox News and believe everything's true there cannot watch MSNBC or read the Wall Street Journal or maybe even the New York Times. But I compel you to think about listening to all sides of the argument to get all the information that's available. And if you start thinking fake news here, well, come on. Let's get a grip on this. Let's find the places that we know there is a level amount of news from all different angles and watch that, read that, consume that, not stick to just something that bears out your own opinion that may not actually be right. I hate to break it to you. You and I are not right in our opinions about things all the time. Sometimes when you look at something like, let's take Amazon stock as an example, a great example. If you're a fundamental investor and all you look at is things like what are the earnings, the PE ratio, what's the valuation, Amazon is not going to be a stock that you could ever say is a good deal. Meanwhile, look what's happened to that stock. Tesla. Tesla, another great example, right? You look at that stock and you look at, okay, what are the earnings of the company right now? What are their projected earnings? How many cars are they producing? Okay, let's look at the valuation compared to Ford and GM and other companies. And oh my gosh, I couldn't invest in that. Meanwhile, have you seen the stock lately? Over the last 2 years, when we're sitting here trying to find the fundamental valuation of this thing and saying, oh man, that's nothing I can invest in. It keeps on going up. Yeah, it had a recent downstroke recently. So hurrah, you're right for 10%, but you lost out on the last 200%. So all I'm doing here is asking you to think about looking at a variety of pieces of information that may not necessarily go along with what you're thinking and your beliefs are, just to get the other side of it. And I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about more of investing. Look at the reasons why people may be very bullish on a Tesla or maybe bearish on Apple. I don't know. Just something that goes not along with what you're saying, and get all of the information so that you can get all of the pieces so you make a very well-researched decision. Make sense? I hope so. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up here. I want to thank you for joining me. Check out the Investology over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com and all the things that we have to offer there. Thanks so much for joining me this week. We'll be back next week with a good amount of information, some great guests coming up over the next few weeks. So make sure to tell some friends to listen in. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.